I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester, his name is John Anilio, and you're listening to episode number 178 of the Functional Nerds Podcast. And John, I'm feeling much, much better.
Yes.
Much better.
That's good, yeah, because as people may or may not know, we record a bunch of episodes at one time, so even though you get an episode a week, we actually do a lot of the recording at one shot. So the last three episodes you heard, Patrick sounded like death. He wasn't – well, actually, he probably was sick for about that long, but he was sick for that long before those episodes were aired.
Sick Christmas through the middle of January, so
yeah,
fell right into when we were recording.
Well, it's good to have you, your voice back in the shape that we're used to hearing it. So that's great. And so that is Patrick, and he is an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude, and a Hugo winner. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. Also, a new thing that I put out a couple weeks ago is a new EP called Walk the Fire. It was a commission from John Miro, who's been a guest on the show before, and Walk the Fire is a shared world anthology that he puts out, and he had commissioned me to write some music for it. So this is a 5-track EP. It has an orchestral piece, and it has 2 new songs, an acoustic take on one of those songs. And so that's new. That's up. That's pay what you want, including free over at my site. So go check it out if that sounds interesting to you.
And John?
Yes.
Miro rhymes with hero.
Yes. Did I say it right?
Yeah, you did.
Because I'm like, Miro rhymes with hero, yes. But you have to do like the John Miro, like when you say hero, you have to like sort of pump your fist and say it very, very heroically. Our guest today is Michael J. Martinez. He is the author of The Daedalus Incident and its forthcoming sequel, The Enceladus Crisis. I think I got it. He's a former reporter for the Associated Press and ABCNews.com and currently works in corporate communications because writing novels does not pay like it should. He's a proud member of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. He lives in New Jersey with his family. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Happy to be here. Love the podcast, and I'm really happy to be a functional nerd, mostly.
Mostly, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny with the show. I've told the story, like, in the brief part is that Patrick did his own podcast before we started doing this together, and he would always say that he was a functional nerd, but that was not the name of the podcast. And I had the idea for the podcast for like a year before I pitched it to him, because every time I'd hear his podcast, I'd be like, "That's the name. Why is he not using that name?"
That's a good name.
Just because I'm like, because he had a good name, and I had a you know, suggested to him. So there you go.
That's back in the day when I would talk about the history of blues and started, and yeah, I would do all that kind of stuff. I was all over the place.
Yeah, awesome. That's okay. That's okay.
No, but that's high quality nerddom.
Well, and I scripted every single word. Ooh. It was such a trip. Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, I did, and I did my own podcast too, which was just talking about my music and stuff. And I don't know if I scripted it as much. I'd have notes, and I would record, but I would record bits, like maybe 2 or 3 minutes at a time, and then take a break and record again, and then I would edit it all. Like, I edited it so much.
Wow.
And then, well, then you burn out if you do. Well, I did anyway, and I think people like to hear conversations. Like, I don't really like a lot of one-person podcasts. I'm sure there's some great ones, and people could probably point to a lot of really good ones, but I always like just hearing people talk, and it's...
You get the best stuff that way. You know, I remember back when I worked at ABCNews.com, I actually teamed up with a reporter to do a video story for the actual television, and just to watch their prep, and then to watch all of the things that they had to do to boil down all of that work into 5 minutes of television, I could sit there and spend an hour with a guy and just wander all over the place and then get him at that one moment to say, like, the best little thing that maybe he wasn't supposed to say or was off script, and then you're like, yes, I got you. You made
notes. Yeah.
Well, I think my first episode, I recorded an hour and a half or something like that, and then I edited it for like 12 hours to get a 30-minute episode or something.
Ooh.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
I think with the advent of podcasts, it's just, I can only speak for myself, but it seems to be a lot of people are the same way. I like just hearing people talk, like, and even some of the bigger podcasts than us, you know, they have even more sort of celebrity type folks on. To hear a 45-minute or an hour conversation with a, you know, kind of a bigwig, it's really interesting because you just realize they're real people too, and you never hear them like that. Because even if you hear them on a late night talk show, which is fairly open ended, it's really only 3 or 4 minutes of actual conversation, and it's pretty.
They totally prep that stuff on late night. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to talk about this, and this, and
Yeah, keep going, Mike. That was Patrick's cue.
I saw Patrick. The beautiful thing about doing this small video is that, you know, Patrick's going to throw signs at me and give me the finger and whatnot.
I won't do anything at all to distract you, I promise.
Yeah, okay. And then there's a fluffy bunny. Oh, wait, it's Yoda. Oh, wow. John, I'm telling you, Patrick has the best toys. He really does.
And it's great that no one sees it. So it's great that
no one
this
does.
Audio
podcast. Audio. No one ever sees my toys.
Well, anyway, so let's we're doing it to try to break Patrick's trying of distracting us, why don't we get on to our picks of the week?
All right.
Picks of the week.
And Mike, you're our guest this week, so why don't you go first?
Well, something that I actually recently downloaded that I've been really enjoying is an iPhone app. I'm sure it's on Android and everything else as well. So a mobile app called Untappd, UNTAPPD, because we don't need that E. It is for beer drinkers. You can, and Patrick laughs. You can basically check in with what you're drinking, rate it, share it with a network of friends. It'll also post to Twitter if you want. You can put comments on it. So not only is it, you know, sort of announcing to the world that, hey, I drink really bad beer or really good beer, but for me personally, it's been a great way to keep track of stuff that I really liked, stuff that, you know, there's a wish list. So, you know, I'm going to be heading out to California in about 2 weeks, and, you know, I always want to try a bunch of stuff there. So, you know, it's a great way of keeping track. I have a tab on my website called The Beer Fridge, where I've been trying to do sort of small reviews of the beers that I've had. And it's got 70-something entries in there. That's great. But it's, you know, I don't carry around my blog with me everywhere to sit down and then type, you know, six things, whereas this Untappd thing, you know, it's like doing a tweet. Much more easy to manage. So that's my pick. I enjoy it. I'm friends with Will Wheaton on Untappd, so that makes me happy. If that doesn't give me nerd cred, I don't know what does.
When you said that, I heard Sheldon's voice in my head saying, "Bring me the head of Will Wheaton."
So Untappd is sort of like a Goodreads for beer then. So you could sort of keep track of the beers you drink instead of the books you read. Because that's kind of what that's what I use Goodreads for. I don't really use a lot of the social part of it or anything like that. It's really so I can look back and see what I've read, because even though it takes me a long time to read books, you know, over the course of a couple of years, you've read a lot of books if you're reading constantly. And I mean, it takes me about 3 weeks to finish a book typically, but you know, it adds up to a couple hundred books, and it's like, what did I read? And I'm like, yeah. And I like just sort of looking back at it and seeing what I did read and what my reading habits are. So, but Untappd, very good. Just a little story about beer. My son, who tends to just sort of repeat commercials. He's autistic, so he repeats a lot of stuff. But he's talking a lot more these days. And announced to me yesterday, I want to drink Bud Light water. I'm like, because he thought it was like a water commercial, because he's, you know,
which is so true.
I wanted to say, you don't know how true you are, but he actually got me speeches when he said that. I was like, so
you didn't look at him and say, "No, son, we're an old style house."
Yeah, I was gonna say like, we're a Michelob family.
Hey, Mike, I'm just curious. So, just want you to remember, if you do go to California and you go to a store to buy beer, don't forget that you have to pay for bags.
Yes, I recognize that. That's a big thing there now, and that's fine. I'll bring a bag. I can put it in my luggage, and
there
that should be fine. And hopefully, bring some beer back and not have it break. I haven't had it happen yet, so.
Very good, very good. Okay, I'll go next. My pick this week is going to be kind of a weird one. It's actually iTunes, which is obviously an app that's been around for a long time. Listeners of the podcast know that I talk a lot about Spotify, and I still use Spotify and like it, but I also, my criticism of Spotify, even though it has a great catalog of just about everything, it's a horrible app. It's a horrible app in terms of organizing your music. There's really no way to organize
it. It's terrible.
It's terrible. And when you listen to tons and tons and tons of music, as one who would use Spotify would, when you want to go back and listen to something, you can't find it. You have to type it in all over again. And I used to do this kind of thing. So anyway, I got a new laptop a couple of months ago, and it has a really big hard drive again. And I'm like, oh, I can put all my music that I have on this external drive on the hard drive on this computer, no sweat. So I did that, and I've been using iTunes a lot again lately, and I don't plan on canceling my Spotify subscription just because I love having access to all that stuff, and I'm trying to go back and figure out how to organize it, but I am insane with the smart playlists in iTunes, and I think that's a feature that not a lot of people know about, but you can, instead of just creating a regular playlist, make a smart playlist, and what you do is you could set all of these parameters. So you can set it. The biggest ones are put stuff on this list, have it be 50 songs, something that I haven't listened to in 30 days or 45 days. You could set it to whatever you want. Something that I haven't skipped in that amount of time as well. You could put it by genre. So I have like one big 250 song. Just pull anything random that's, you know, but exclude all my instrumental and soundtrack stuff, because when I'm driving along in the car, I don't want to hear like soundtrack music pop up, so like I'll take it all out. So you can really filter and filter and filter, and then what's great is it keeps track of it, so then the next time you plug your iPod in, whatever you listen to or whatever, it sucks all the stuff you listen to off and puts new crap on. So you have to put a lot of work into creating these playlists to begin with, but then you always have cool stuff to listen to. So I'm really enjoying it. So it's iTunes, but it's really the smart playlists feature in iTunes that I really recommend everyone go and work with it. And just, you know, type smart playlists into Google and you can find all these nerds that put all these recipes together that you could sort of start with. So that is my pick, iTunes.
Now what I don't like is that on the iPhone that they have split podcasts out of iTunes. So your podcasts are on a separate app now, and I hate that.
Really? It's hard to find them. I mean, for like when they first did that, I spent 3 weeks going, where are my podcasts?
Exactly.
Well, where did you do with them? Are they not doing podcasts anymore? But I mean, they're there, and they have a separate app for them. I just don't know why.
Well, I'll do another piggyback pick on top of that. What I use for podcasts is an app called Instacast, and I think it's a much better podcast client than the iTunes one or the Apple one. So it's just instant. I think they just scrape the iTunes to get all of them, but it's a much better way. I find it. It's a really good app to organize it, and it syncs up amongst your devices. So if sometimes you listen to podcasts on an iPod and then an iPad or whatever, it will sync where you left off. So worth. I think it may be like a $5 app, but well worth it if you listen to a lot of podcasts. So Instacast is the name of that too.
Cool.
All right, Patrick, what is your pick then?
My pick this week is the Sierra Nevada's Dream Chaser program.
Ooh.
I'm going to use my announcer voice. The Dream Chaser is a reusable crewed orbital. Screwed it up. The Dream Chaser is a reusable crewed suborbital and orbital vertical takeoff, horizontal landing, lifting body space plane being developed by Sierra Nevada Corporation Space Systems. The Dream Chaser is designed to carry up to 7 people to and from low Earth orbit. The vehicle will launch vertically on an Atlas V rocket and land horizontally automatically on conventional runways. And my friend Karen Burnham has just been hired as the lead EMC engineer for the project. That's electromagnetic compatibility. And I think that's so incredibly awesome, and can't wait to guilt her into letting me sit in the driver's seat and take some selfies.
I did a panel with her at WorldCon.
Awesome. And her family are moving here to Colorado. So right now she lives 40 minutes away from John DiNardo, and they never see each other. Soon she will live 40 minutes away from me, and we'll probably never see each other. So
that's fair.
But I think that's awesome. And for all the young women out there who don't think that math and engineering and science is worth it, I offer you Karen Burnham.
I think that's an awesome thing. I did think you were talking about beer for a second, though, because
I know Sierra Nevada has the same great beer.
I'm like, wow, they're starting a space program too. Wow,
wow, beer in space. What's going to happen to the bubbles?
Everything. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That's really cool. Well, and that's cool that she's moving close to you, because that's really deep. You'll probably see her more because you're willing to drive.
I am willing to drive. Yeah, because I grew up in California, and so you have to drive everywhere. So I am used to that.
Yeah. So, well,
it's
very
like,
good.
It's like
cool.
we're going across the street to the 7-Eleven to get something. Okay, everybody get in the car.
Yeah, New Jersey's the same way. You drive everywhere in New Jersey too. But,
yeah, but your cars have built-in tanning booths.
You know, all right. So, you know, maybe Michael isn't very New Jersey looking either. I will say this. I've been watching At Midnight, that new show with Chris Hardwick, which is a really funny show, and there was a commercial on it, which had this like really stereotypical like Jersey Shore looking dude with like a black tank top and was all tan, and it was just a company called Spray Tans with a Z,
because it's cooler with a Z.
Right.
Absolutely.
And it was just like, but he was so over the top of not, and I thought it was like a bit on the show for a second because it was so bad. And I'm like, I don't think that was a bit. And my wife and I are watching it. And like, it was on our DVR. We like rewound it. And I'm like, no, that's a commercial. That's a real thing. But it was all like, get tan, pick up chicks. And it was all like, we got the flyest chicks hanging out. Like, this was in a commercial. He was saying flyest chicks in. It was.
This is not my New Jersey. I don't see that happening around here. No. But, I mean, I live in the burbs of New York, and you know, it's not the shore. Jersey is not the shore. Jersey has a lot more going for it.
Yes, I say this every week, Michael, and Patrick doesn't believe me.
Well, the reason being that Snooki keeps showing up everywhere. Now she's going to be on Supernatural.
Oh boy. Yeah. That we don't need. Yeah. Oh boy.
It's bad.
Well, anyway, all right. Well, let's move on to our main topic. And today we're going to talk about cons. Michael has The Daedalus Incident out right now, and he's got another book, the sequel to that, coming out very soon. And so he is an author that is in a position where he's going to cons, getting invited to some cons. And we talk about cons on the show sometimes, or we at least mention the authors that we have on where they're going to be. Patrick and I go to cons, you know, on a semi-regular basis. But how do you choose which ones to go to? Unless you're a guest of honor, even the author that are the guests, they have to pay a lot of this out of their pocket. Usually it's just if you're invited as a guest, you usually get the fee. Like, you don't have to pay to go, but, well, you got to live somewhere and eat something and get there. And so there's a lot of expenses involved. Like, actually, the fee for most cons, well, I shouldn't say most, but some, is not very much at all. It's the hotel, it's the driving or the flying or the money. So, Michael, what's been your so first of all, maybe you could start by what cons you have gone to and then what you're sort of considering coming up.
Well, here's the thing. I've been to two. One wasn't necessarily a con. It was the CIPWA meeting in San Jose last year.
Do you know the way to San Jose?
No, but U.S. Airways does.
Okay.
So that's good. I went to San Jose, and that wasn't, you know, there was a mass autographing, but there wasn't actually, it wasn't a con as much as it was a bunch of authors getting together, doing some business, and then hitting the bar, which is what you do.
Sounds like
and then having the Nebula Awards. So, what's that?
Sounds like every con I've ever been to.
Exactly. But I guess my first official con was Worldcon in San Antonio, which, you know, start big.
And I interviewed you there, and it's over on SF Signal.
Exactly. And we had a great interview, and I met a lot of folks whom I really hadn't met before, whom I'd communicated just via email. I had a fantastic time. Did it actually mean... I one of the things that I've been thinking about now is what did it actually do for my alleged career as an author? Because I guess now that I have a second book, I can call it sort of a burgeoning career. What does it mean to go? What is the, to put it in business terms, I suppose, what's the cost benefit analysis?
Return on investment.
The ROI, exactly. So, I've been thinking about it this year and trying to figure out, all right, how do I best use limited time and resources? Because I have a day job, with a limited amount of vacation time. My wife is a travel writer, and we go very cool places that don't have cons, and I'm perfectly fine with that. So, you know, my vacation time is limited as well in terms of where I want to go. And so I'm looking at the schedule this year and just trying to figure out what's going to give me the best sort of exposure to the fans, who are just fantastic, lovely people. I have fans. I have at least three. They're fantastic. It's great stuff. And you know, where can I go to find new fans to bring my work to a broader audience? And so that's kind of where I'm at, trying to figure out which ones to go to. The only one that I am absolutely going to so far this year is LunaCon, which is up in Westchester, New York. And that's middle of March.
And so that's close to you.
Yeah, no, that's not a hotel. That to me, I mean, and it's one of the things where if you're on enough panels, they won't even charge you, you know, the registration. So that's perfect. I go, I pull up to the hotel, I go in, I do my spiel, I meet, I greet, I head home. I have dinner. It's nice.
Yeah, see, I do something similar because Mile High Con is at a hotel that is about 11 minutes from my house. And perfect. it's all freeway. So I jump there and I can go in the morning and be there and be on panels and be talking to people. And then when the parties wind down, I drive home and crash.
Yeah. And this will be pretty much the same. I mean, it's a little further. I'm in North Jersey and Westchester, you know, you got to get over the Tappan Zee or get into the city to get around or whatever. But it's still, I don't have to pay for a hotel. I don't have to pay for a flight. It's going to be a tank of gas. And that's perfect. And I kind of wish there were more in the New York area because there aren't I know of.
And then do you use the con suite for food?
I did at CIFWA and I did at WorldCon. And let me tell you, that's nice.
And I don't think everybody realizes that exists.
Which is just mind-blowing. It's like, go to the con suite.
Yeah.
There's food. It may not be the healthiest, most preferable food, but it will keep you going.
Well, if you go early enough in the day, you can get the fruit.
Yes, well, that'll go fast.
But it goes very fast, yes. And then you're left with cookies and chips and stuff like that. But just talking, I mentioned Chris Garcia not too long ago.
And
Chris is a wonderful guy, and I've said before, you haven't arrived until Chris Garcia Tackle hugs you at the Hugos. But I did an interview with him where we talked about this kind of stuff because he actually went to a con every weekend for a whole year.
My God.
And the tricks for him were finding people to share space with, so you're always staying with someone, and you're mm-hmm. sharing the costs of the room. And using that con suite for food because there is food there. It will sustain you. It will get you through that con weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you may not feel the best at the end of it, but go to any convention in any type of discipline or career or whatever and come out of it feeling sparkling. No, that's not what conventions are for. You feel slightly gross afterwards. That's part of it. But yeah, a con suite's fantastic. I can totally see where rooming will definitely help. You know, I don't know. It's just a question of finding like the best one. I think that'll really make a difference in what I consider to be my career.
Well, I think I've thought a lot about this kind of stuff too with cons because I've scaled. I never went like every weekend, or I would go to a handful a year. And really, I'm only going to maybe two a year at this point, if that much.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I will tell you this in terms of the cons for my experience, in terms of like that return on investment. And some I just think are priced, or just depending on their distance and depending on where you are and everything, it's just it doesn't make any sense to go to them sometimes. But I think with any of this stuff, whether it's going to a con or being on a podcast or writing a guest blog or doing any sort of promotional kind of thing, one thing never really means much. That's just been my experience. A couple things have been more than others, but it's never like I went to this con and then I had 50 new fans, or I was on this podcast and I had 50 new people that did this. Or it's, I mean, I'm sure once you get into like the super big things, maybe you'll see that kind of bump. And when I played Nerdtacular, I'd say the first time, that was kind of a big bump where I saw a lot of new people. And I'm still pretty good friends with a lot of those people because there's like 500 people there, and probably about 100 of them I still talk to like almost every day on Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, so that I would say is the exception that sort of proves the rule for me. But every other thing is like you're just kind of there and you're kind of making yourself seen and known. And if you sort of acquit yourself as kind of, I hate to put it this simply, but like kind of an interesting, nice person.
Well, let's take
that helps. Decent human.
Yeah, let's take it back to Will Wheaton. Don't be a dick.
Right. Yeah.
And here's the thing, John. It's something that we've talked about before, and maybe Michael hasn't thought about it this way yet, but it's marketing, and it's about the long tail.
Right.
You know, it's about slowly building your audience. And there's lots of people out there who are like, no, I need more right now. And they're trying to get those spikes. And they get those spikes and they're like, yeah, I got the spike. You know, there's so many people following me and there's this and that. And then they don't realize that those people slowly drip away. And
unless you keep them occupied, unless you keep them and you interact with them and you invest the time. Oh, yeah, I fully recognize. I mean, part of what my day job is marketing. And there's a lot of value to guest blogs and cons and all the other efforts and podcasts to get yourself out there and be like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. I've heard of that guy. I've heard of this book. I can think of I've done probably half a dozen podcasts and more guest blogs than I can count and blog interviews. Been to two conventions since the book launched in the summer, and I can count on one hand like the number of sort of gets, I suppose, the big sort of things that actually resulted in meaningful not only spikes in followers and everything else, but actual sales.
Well, but your situation is a little bit different because you had a lot of fun getting your book into publication, into print.
It was fun. Yeah. It was great. Because my publisher, Nightshade Books, went from being a wonderful independent publisher to being nearly bankrupt to being bought by a larger publisher and now is on its way to becoming a wonderful imprint of a larger publisher.
So you had an atypical path to publishing that most people would not experience.
And in that sense, in terms of like getting exposure, it was definitely a double-edged sword because, you know, we were originally supposed to launch like in early May of last year. And I didn't have a publisher at the time because they were in negotiations to be bought. But in the long term, all of the press that got fed into, you know, oh my gosh, Nightshade, you know, it was up on IO9, for example. They did like 3 or 4 stories. Justin at Staffer's Book Review did a fantastic thing on the whole Nightshade deal. And when it finally came out the other end, Nightshade basically was promoting the Daedalus incident as the first major release from the revitalized Nightshade. And I'm like, well, that's awfully nice of you guys. I had no idea. So, all right, I'll hang. That's cool. Let's do a few more. And we did. We after that, you know, we signed a deal for 2 more books. So, you know, you can definitely make lemons out of lemonade, but it's... It was an atypical path, and just trying to get my bearings now as someone who's out of the gate for a second time is pretty interesting. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. No. So to sort of bring it back to the cons, I think this is just my feeling about cons. Like go to the ones that you can afford to go to, number one. So like LunaCon, for instance, that's, you can drive to it, and surprisingly I've never been to that one, and I can drive there too, so I should probably get to that one. But even the other one, you know, whatever ones that you can sort of afford, that's all good. But really, I know for me, I judge it on how many people that I know are going to be there or that I've wanted to meet in person are going to be there. So, because to me, it's very social. It's a very social thing.
Right.
So I want to have a lot of people that I really like that are going to be there. So if nothing else, it's a lot of just hanging out with people that I like. That's sort of my biggest criteria. And then for me, the other thing is I would hope to be on a decent number of good panels. And you know, and it's weird for me because I perform, you know, because I the only con I like performing at this point is Nerdtacular. I've really not had a good experience anywhere else before. I shouldn't say that. BaltzCon I had a couple of good shows at too, but
you need to preface that though, John. Nerdtacular only has one track.
Right. Exactly. That's why Nerdtacular. So it's let me backtrack and say this is not a slag against anybody that puts these cons together. Everybody that I've ever dealt with at a con, I've really liked. It's that most cons there are so many tracks, and you know when you're doing a panel and only a couple people show up, it's disappointing. But it's all right, whatever. If you're performing and not that many people show, it's heartbreaking. It's really depressing. And I've never really had that horribly. Like I've had like one con where, you know, not that many people showed up and that was kind of a drag. You know, usually I could pull in a decent number of folks, but to me that the whole, at least my feeling is like I'm coming, like the audience should kind of, there should be a better chance of having an audience than me. I don't want to be going and like flyering the hotel saying like, come to my gig. Like, I don't want to do that. You know, like I'll promote it a little bit, but I'm not going to go crazy because that's just not who I want to be. Like, I don't want to be that guy.
My suggestion is go to your local con, volunteer as much as possible to be on every single panel. Be nice to the people who are running it, because even if you don't like what's going on, believe me, they are killing themselves trying to pull off a convention. And so you being a dick to them is not going to be helpful.
The people who run these cons are so dedicated. They are so into it. Bless their hearts, man. They do a fantastic job. No matter how it turns out,
absolutely,
they're just pouring everything they got into it.
Yep.
You just really have to respect that.
Yep.
Oh, it's like two full-time jobs and you don't get paid.
Exactly.
Is running what a con is. Yeah.
Yeah. You might get a T-shirt and you might not have to pay to get in.
Right. That's pretty much it.
Well, cool. Well, so if that being said, to kind of start wrapping it up then. So what are you looking at? So you mentioned Lunacon. So what else is on your radar?
So I'm looking at Lunacon. I think I'm going to give the Nebulas a pass this year. I had a great time last year meeting my fellow authors. It's far. It's not. It was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot. And I'm in constant contact now with a number of authors. When CIFCO comes back to the East Coast in the following year, then I'll probably go back again. So I'm probably not going to go to Worldcon, which is in London. I love London, and to be able to go to London as a tax write-off is fantastic, but that's tough. That is a long way. That's an expensive flight.
At least $2,000 on that trip.
At least. I mean, yeah, it's tough. So I may do DragonCon. I'm looking into that. I may do GenCon. I'm looking into that. Something with, I love the fan-run cons a lot. Like you said, they put a lot of love into them. But I'm also looking to see what sort of a broader audience is like and see if I can sort of get past that signal-to-noise ratio a little bit, which is hard. I don't, you know. We'll find out. And then probably World Fantasy, because that's local, drivable, and, you know, it seems to
work. Well, and there is an alternative to Worldcon on this side of the pond that happens, and I forgot what it's called, but there is
NASFIC,
yes. And so whenever Worldcon goes overseas, we have a con here.
Right, and that's in Detroit, and that's also a possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, supposedly you can stay really cheap in Detroit if you're willing to just squat, so...
Yeah. And there's plenty of opportunities for that, sad to say.
I know I'm looking at World Fantasy too, because it's in DC. Again, it's drivable. It's in November. You know, that's like the other big one that I kind of am looking at, because I'm like, it's kind of a decent time of year where I already have some time off from school, so I wouldn't have to burn a day. So I'm looking at that one too. I just want to see who's going. But anyway, all right. Well, as we wrap it up here. So Michael, why don't you throw out your website and your Twitter and your books, where people can get them and all that jazz.
All right. So it's michaeljmartinez.net. The Daedalus Incident is out now. It's been far more well received than it has any right to be. And I'm very grateful for that. The Enceladus Crisis is out May 6th, in ebook, audiobook, and in paperback. Currently, I also have a novella out called The Gravity of the Affair. It's an ebook, and it's also in Audible audiobook because they liked it so much they bought it. Bless their hearts. So that's what I got going right now. And then the third book, which I am in the midst of writing, should drop early next year. And it's tentatively titled The Venusian Gambit. So we'll see how that goes.
Awesome, awesome.
And then after that, who knows? But it's nice. It's a nice problem to have.
Cool. What's your Twitter handle again?
At MikeMartinez72.
Okay.
And I think that's it.
Cool. Very good. For me this week, again, I have the Walk the Fire EP out. It's over on my website. You can get that over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
I encourage people to go over to sfsignal.com and search for Michael J. Martinez and pull up our interview from Worldcon, because that was a lot of fun. I have a post over on Kirkus. It's a review of Nemo, Heart of Ice by Alan Moore. So that should be up and going. I was also interviewed by the Way of the Buffalo podcast. Check that out. And I just keep reminding folks, I am the semi-sort of official podcaster at the Pikes Peaks Writers Conference, April 25th through 27th. Guest faculty include Gail Carriger, Chuck Wendig, and Jim C. Hines. And I will be doing interviews that entire weekend with folks and pushing those out via SF Signal. So if you are an author and you are looking for a conference where you meet other authors and editors and actually pitch to editors and agents and do workshops and all that kind of good stuff, you might take a look at Pikes Peak Writers.
And that's a good slate of instructors too.
Yes.
That's impressive.
And those are just the genre ones, you know, off the top of my head, but there's something for everybody. They, you know, they've got romance writers, they've got fiction writers. I mean, you name it, they're there.
Cool. That sounds awesome. I wish I lived closer. I would totally go to that, even though I'm not a writer, just to hang.
There you go.
I just sit in the corner with my guitar being like, "Hey, writers here. Hey."
All right. That's it for me.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Gunsmoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.